Welcome to the Student of the Game Fire Podcast with your host, Danny B. Today's guest is Berlin Maza. 18 years of career experience, captain with the City of Issaquah Eastside Fire Rescue east of Seattle, Washington on Engine 178. The fire service wasn't on Berlin's radar. His parents thought he would end up being in the tech industry, but everything in life occurs for a reason, and we all serve a purpose regardless of what industry we are in. Once Berlin got on, the key to his success was founded on two things: betting on himself and having mentors or individuals who will push and guide you to things you would have never thought was possible. Berlin laid down the gospel on various topics we discuss, especially when it comes to company officer and leadership development. Grab you a notepad and get ready to jot a few things down with this one. With that, I present Berlin Maza.
Hello, everybody. My name is Berlin Maza. Captain out of here. I'm a captain out here out in Issaquah, Washington, just east of Seattle. I got into the fire service going on 18 years. This June will be 18 years. I was a young 22-year-old at the time when I got hired. I started testing and looking around when I was about age 20, 21, and knocked on a fire station door one time close to home, close to where I worked at the time, actually, and didn't get, you know, knocking on a fire station door is not necessarily how you get an application or a job, but didn't get an answer from, you know, firefighters at the station, but I went online instead and basically just found out how to start testing and interviewing and, you know, just fully indulged at that point and started testing. About two and a half years later, I got hired into the fire service. So that's how I got in.
Okay. All right. Now, is the fire service something you always wanted to do, or was it like a friend that guided you? Did you see an ad? I always kind of like to ask this, like, how, because, you know, some people grow up with, like, their generational firefighters. Some are like, I had a moment where I saw the fire truck. So what's your story? How'd you get into it?
That's such a great question, because very atypical, I guess. I did not always aspire to be a firefighter. I mean, that's the truth. I'd grown up, my parents had always thought I'd get into some kind of tech or something like that. I loved computers. I loved, you know, I was just, you know, good with my hands, but I was, you know, I played a ton of video games growing up. So I was very much into, like, you know, how can I use my mind and my brain to do something with computers or I lived, you know, close to in Seattle, close to a city called Redmond. And that's where the inception of Microsoft was. So my family always thought I'd, you know, probably do something in the tech industry, you know, with Microsoft being in our backyard. But no, so I did not always want to be a firefighter. I was into the fitness at the time. I played sports growing up. I was a personal trainer and group fitness instructor. I got a degree in fitness and exercise science coming out of high school. I went to college and I was like, I want to do more. And I literally was driving. I mentioned in the intro, I literally drove by a fire station in the city of Redmond. And I just pulled over. I was 20 years old at the time. And I knocked on the front door. Nobody answered. And I just wanted to get information. I kind of wanted just to see what it was. I had no idea what the fire service was. Didn't know what testing meant. No one answered the door because, you know, firefighters are busy. They're probably out running a call at that time, whatever it was. So I went online and then just started looking up, you know, a written exam. Well, what is a written exam? So I started looking into that. I took a test. And then as many listeners know, that's where it starts. And so I just started taking a bunch of tests, started interviewing, and I took a college course. It was called the Introduction to Emergency Management at a school called Bellevue Community College, which is actually called Bellevue College now, again, just east of Seattle. And then that kind of just grew my interest. And then so, you know, fast forward, you know, year, 2 years later, after interviewing and taking so many written exams, I got hired. And I fortunately worked for the department where I got hired. So 18 years later, here we are.
Okay. Now you mentioned it took 2 years just to get the foot in the door. So I'm assuming you applied any and everywhere you could.
I did. Yes. And some of the listeners, if they're newer to the fire service, may not resonate completely, but as a lot of the listeners, you know, back in 10, 15, 20, 25 years ago, sometimes you either had to stand in line to get an application because there was only 100 applications, but 500 people, you know, would walk up and, you know, 400 would get turned away. But I applied everywhere. I applied for Seattle Fire Department, which is the first department I applied for. I think they had 2,600 applicants, and they interviewed at that time, like maybe, we'll say 1,000. And you know, it was intimidating. Like, what is going on? Like, this many people? How many people are you hiring? What do you mean you're hiring 30? Like, there's 2,000 people in line here. I remember I flew down to Phoenix. This would have been back in 2000, and this is 2009 or 10. I'd been working already where I am now, but there was uncertainty. You know, the recession of 2008, 2009 is actually exactly when I get hired. I know you got hired 19 years ago, and you know, during the same exact time. So uncertainty. So I was testing even when after I got hired, but yeah, I tested for Phoenix, and then I tested for a lot of city departments where I live and work now. But then different counties near where you know where I'm at now. If I were to put a number on it, I probably tested for 20 different fire departments and interviewed for at least 15. So yeah, that was my journey.
Okay. All right. So you get, I'm assuming, did you get a phone call or a letter stating your acceptance into where you're at now?
Oh, that's a phenomenal question. I remember it like it was yesterday. I walked out of the interview with the fire chief after I interviewed with him. You know, the final stage typically is an interview with the fire chief. And I currently work for a department now that is the neighboring city of where I grew up. And I interviewed with the city of where I grew up just the week prior. And so when the fire chief asked me, he actually says, we're at the top of the stairs at what we call our headquarters building. He says, if I were to offer you a job, but the city of Bellevue is the other city, would offer you a job, which position would you take? And I don't know how many people actually know their story or how many people around here are going to know their story, but I'll share it here anyway. Is I told him, yeah, I'd work for here. You know, chief, this is where I want to be. At that time, you know, my heart was wanting to work for the other department, the city where I grew up in. But as you know, and in many things in life, things happen for a reason. You know, I took job. I wouldn't have taken anything back. I've been there almost 18 years now. It actually turned out at that time, after I got offered the position, it was like a week and a half later, I get a call. No, not a phone call, a letter in the mail. And it was a denial of a position with the city that I wanted to work for. So it all worked out. You know, had I told the chief, you know, chief, I would actually want to work for the other department, and he probably would have moved on from me. And then I would have been in waiting and I wouldn't have got accepted to the other department. But with that being said, I'm happy where I'm at. I've had a fulfilling, rewarding, and everything about where I'm at now for 18 years. I know nothing otherwise. And so that's kind of the story of where I'm at.
Okay. All right. So you get accepted. I'm assuming, did you have to do some sort of onboarding academy? Did they do a full academy or an orientation? How was that like?
Oh, good question. So back in 08, at this time, at least in our region, you needed to have all your certs. So you needed to have an EMT, you needed to have your Firefighter One cert, and you needed to have been a volunteer firefighter at that time. Very different than times now. I know that even the way that we hire in our organization now, we put everyone through everything that I just named. So yeah, I put myself through all of that when I was age 21 and 22 prior to getting hired. I needed to have all that, but we did do a small academy. You know, I know academies nowadays, you know, recruit schools are anywhere between 4 and 6 months for many departments, some longer. They still put us through, I think it was like a 6 week program. And that was just kind of, you know, we were all trained as EMTs and firefighters already through various organizations, volunteers, wherever else. But that 6 week was intended for us to kind of, first of all, ensure that we had the appropriate training, but also to kind of get on board with the department and, you know, learn things their way before we hit the streets. So that was kind of our onboarding process. And we graduated, if I remember correctly, it was shortly after the 4th of July. And then I think we hit the streets July 6th or 7th or something like that back in 2008. So,
Okay.
yeah.
And upon completion of your academy or your onboard training, what was it like actually being assigned to an apparatus, and what was your first assignment?
Oh, good question. I'm gonna go way back now. So my first assignment was on an engine company, and we have 3-person engine companies over here. So when we first got there, and we still do this to this day, is we ride as a fourth for a few shifts to kind of get your feet wet, to understand the life, you know, of a firefighter, that, you know, the life of responding to a call, you know, and it's not like 802 on day one, you're the backseat firefighter, and now you got a, you know, working fire, and it's like, well, I don't even know how to put the seatbelt on yet, let alone go to a working fire. So we rode fourth. And we were able to, you know, basically just observe. If you obviously take part in every call, every response, every training, all that, but it was an opportunity to observe, you know, the the daily workings of, being a firefighter. And so we did that for, I think it was 2 weeks worth, and we were on a modified Detroit schedule, so three shifts. And so I think we did, it must have been six shifts at the time. We rode fourth. And then, after that, then we rode third. So we were the backseat firefighter, from that point on, assigned to, at this point, I believe it was one of our busiest, if not our busiest engine company at that time. And yeah, that was that.
Okay. And for those that don't know, including myself, can you tell us about your department? How many stations, amount
Oh
of
yeah.
personnel size? It doesn't have to be exact.
Yeah, absolutely. So I apologize that I, may stutter a little bit here because we have been a growing fire department. I got hired in 2008. We were a nine station fire department that served four different cities and a few different fire districts. Since 2021, we've done contract for service and or merged fire departments with three other fire departments and even another one, in the works now. So we currently serve, I think six different cities and three or four different fire districts, and part of an Indian reservation as well. We cover over 300 square miles in the rural areas east of Seattle. Some of our responses are 45, 60-minute responses to get to a response with, no neighboring agency within 25 minutes. But then we do have some downtown corridors with three, four stations within the kind of the urban areas. And that's it on that.
Okay. Are your personnel required to be paramedics or basic EMTs or intermediates?
Good question. Yeah, so we are EMT basics only, so we don't have paramedics. We do have paramedics that work inside our stations, which actually work for other organizations. I know, kind of a goofy layout, but since we cover such a wide area and we don't have paramedics, we house paramedics within those other organizations into our fire station. So they don't have the same patch as us, not the same fire department, but everything's integrated as if they were. Like, we do everything together. We still do the chores, eat together, we still train together on occasion. But yeah, none of our personnel are paramedics. And I forgot to mention that we are a 16 station fire department, 17, probably within the next year or two.
Okay. How many engines, ladders, rescues, and why rescue? I know some organizations are rescues and ambulance, and then for some it's like a heavy crash rescue. So what's your department complement?
Oh, good question. So we have two ladder companies, and then we have 13. Oh, you're gonna catch me off guard here. 13 engine companies with a dedicated eight car station, but then we also have a few dedicated eight cars as well. We don't have a dedicated rescue. It is a cross staff unit with one of our other engine companies. What else am I missing? We have, a hazmat unit. We have a wildland team, a very robust wildland team. In fact, one of the most robust wildland teams in the state of Washington. Like I said, hazmat team. We've got a water rescue team. We have a full, squads, we'll call them. We have squads. And so, yeah, we have full capability of all the tech rescues disciplines. We do, and we handle a lot of, trail rescues and water rescues in our organization because we are surrounded by, hills, mountains, and a lot of lakes and rivers as well.
Okay. And on each apparatus, at least your fire suppression apparatus, your minimum staffing is three across the board.
It is three. Yeah, when we have heavy staffing, we'll staff it to four or five, but that's a majority of the year we're three person minimum staffing. Yes.
Okay. And with the trucks, are they strictly doing truck work, or is it engines doing engine work, or vice, you know what I mean? Like, what's that
Yeah,
like?
we're an evolving fire department. In fact, we joined a regional training consortium in which we're trying to get everybody on the same page in the region, that is. And so there's been a little bit of different philosophies on, truck work, stuff like that. But I would say we dedicate our trucks to do truck work. With that being said, we do have them because of just the nature of the staffing in the area with three person companies. We do need sometimes, long responses, like I mentioned earlier. But we do need our trucks to perform engine work as well. So they do both. We try to keep them to truck work, but it's not uncommon to have them do engine work.
Okay. And what is, so if a first due residential structural box assignment comes out, what's your first alarm assignment consist of?
Okay. Yeah, we have four engines, two ladder companies, an aid unit, a medic unit, MSO, and two battalion chiefs.
Okay. And I'm assuming if it's
From how you stated earlier, if it's within the city, like downtown area, your trucks are pretty close to each other. But the far out, you mentioned 25 minute with no mutual aid, or
That
if
is
mutual aid's
correct.
coming,
That is
it's going to be
correct.
a while.
It is going to be a while. Yeah. So we have I mean, arguably three or four very outer lying fire stations where, for example, the station that I work at, we're not far out from anybody, but we could be first on scene for close to 10 minutes before any other unit comes. But we have another one or two other stations that I'd call it where we're out there. They can go to a working fire, call for an upgrade, and be by themselves for a minimum of 15 to 20 minutes, and sometimes 30. So yeah, it's very interesting out here, and we serve a very urban and rural area, so we get kind of all of it, right? We'll have on any given day working the downtown urban area, running 5, 10 calls, 15 calls in a day, and then go out to a rural area where you're running same amount of calls, but you're by yourself all day. So it's interesting and it's different, but it's very dynamic, we'll say. We've been growing as a fire department more or less for the last 15, 20 years, but really grown in the last 5. And so a lot of change. I'm sure that's no different than anybody listening to this show. It's change is the only thing constant in the fire service, and that's where we're at.
Okay. All right. Now I'm gonna go back a little bit. You're a newly firefighter, you're on the floor now, you're at your assigned station, your designated apparatus. Two-part question. At what point did you decide to start moving up the ranks and why?
I love this question because I never desired to move up the ranks. You and I talked a little bit offline about being a firefighter, being an engineer. Engineers where I lived. We didn't have promoted engineers at the time, but all of our firefighters after 3 years became drivers. So we either were driving on any given day or riding backwards on any given day. And the second and third firefighter on the crew would just decide in the morning of, hey, you want to drive today? You want to drive this set of shifts? And we'll, go back and forth. And that's where I lived for the first 11 years of my career. And then I went to a day shift assignment. I went to the training division, which I know a lot of people, don't aspire to go to a day shift assignment, going from working 8 or 9 days a month and now working 5 days a week, 4 days a week, 40 hours a week. But I know we'll talk about this on the show. Sometimes we don't know what we're missing out on. So I went to the training division and was like, I have no idea what I'm doing. I sat there for the first 2 weeks saying, why did I do this? What a mistake. This is dumb. I met to this day my greatest mentors in the fire service. In fact, I host a podcast, Leadership Conversations at the Kitchen Table. Just a little plug there to myself. But I host a podcast as well, started 3 years ago, but it was due to my mentor, who lifted me up. And answering your question, you said what kind of pushed me or drove me to seek promotion. I remember sitting in the training division, having the time of my life, teaching engineer training, teaching firefighter academies, teaching EMT school, and a lieutenant's test came. And my mentor and mentors, battalion chief mentors and captains in the training division, even the training chief himself said, "What are you doing? I don't see your name on the testing list." And I'm like, "Yeah, chief, why would I take the test? Like, this is literally what it says. Like, why wouldn't you take the test?" This is the conversation that literally took place back in 2019. I remember like it was yesterday. It was September 2019. And I said, "Why would I take the test, chief? I'm having the time of my life. I'm learning a ton. Like, I feel like if I test and I do well and I promote, I'm going to get booted out of here and get, because this is a firefighter position and, it's not lieutenant. Like, I can literally be gone tomorrow if I do well on this test." And they're literally were looking at me like I was crazy. Like, and there's a saying, and I don't know if this saying is the same thing over there on the East Coast, but around here, it's like, people promote out of training, meaning like you come to training, you will build a skill set, you will progress so fast, faster than anywhere and any other time in your career, because you'll get to do assignments that you don't get to work on a typical day. You get to work with people, build relationships, take on projects that you won't otherwise, and you promote out of training. I think 99% of everyone that joined our training division leaves because they got promoted. And so I took that and I said, all right, I guess maybe I am crazy. So the next test came by, and they hosted another one 12 months later. So we're talking, this was September 2020 now, right as COVID hit. I took that test, and fortunately, had great preparation with, kind of my mentors and stuff. I scored number one on that test. And before you know it, like I mentioned earlier, I promoted out of training. And so to answer your question, you said what drove me is it was the people around me. I know people talk about all the time in the fire service. The most rewarding thing is not necessarily the calls that you run, even though the work that we do is very rewarding. It's the relationships that you build, it's the people that you meet. It's the people that you say you can call family because they were there for you in your development as a human and as a firefighter. You know, we're talking both professionally and personally. And it was from that those close connections from others that really pushed me to say, yeah, you need to do more because you got that potential, you got that drive, and you know, and we can help you do so. And I don't take anything back.
Okay. And for those that are either that have been in the fire service or especially the new people coming into the fire service, can you explain how important having that mentor, whether that individual or individuals know it or not, but having somebody that's going to give you and have conversations with you that hopefully help elevate your career?
This is perhaps the best question that you can ask on a podcast. This is perhaps the question that we don't talk about enough in the fire service. I will start off with you look at any highly successful person, and I watch sports. I don't know if you're into sports, but I watch all the sports, you know, and Kobe Bryant is one guy that I still watch to this day. You know, I, you know, will follow Nick Saban, even though he's retired now. I'll listen and follow to any highly successful person, and they will tell you. They will preach it, but they would tell you that they're only in their position because of the mentorship that they got from others. People that were around them, that surrounded them, that helped them realize their potential, but that pushed them to their potential. So, in answering your question, when you say, you know, talk about the importance of for that new firefighter, for those new individuals to have that mentorship, it's critical. It's not just critical, you must have it. And I'll go on record just saying that you must have it if you aspire to reach your potential in your career and in life, right? You have to have a mentor. You have to have mentors. Like, you have to have that humility to say, you know what, I want someone and need someone. We'll go ahead and say that we need others to help us see our blind spots. We need others to help us push us beyond our norms. Like, I remember another assignment when I got promoted to lieutenant, I went back to training, and you know, here I am, left the training division. You know, and going back to 9 days a month, I was like, oh my gosh, I hit the lottery again. You know, I already hit the lottery when I took this job back in 2008, working 9 days a month, right? And I went to day shift, and then I went back to get a reappreciation of the schedule. And then it's like, people were like, we have an opening at the recruit academy to be on the cadre. You know, it's like, you need to do it. You know, you're the man for that position. I'm like, man, really? I said, all right, I guess I'm gonna do it. And then, you know, I had an experience, learned, grew, and I promoted again out of that position, and then became a captain. But my point to that story is that mentorship need be there. We need to put ourselves in position. If there's listeners today that are listening to this, the takeaway here is sometimes mentors will seek you out and find you and lift you up organically. But sometimes they won't. Sometimes you need to go seek a mentor. You need to go find somebody. And literally, I've asked this question of some of my mentors. Will you mentor me? I've asked those questions. Like I've and some of my closest people are my mentors today because I sought them and asked them. That's okay. Will you get a no sometimes? Sure, maybe. But it wouldn't be, in my opinion, it wouldn't be a no because they didn't want to. It would just be like maybe they have the time or they're retiring. They, you know, we're moving away, whatever the reason is. But I will guarantee you 99 out of 100 times you ask someone to be a mentor, they're going to say yes. They're going to be flattered, they're going to be excited, and they're going to do it. And so mentorship is critical. It's been very critical in my life. And if you ask any highly successful person, whether it be a, you know, a great leader in your organization, a chief officer, a company officer, an engineer, an athlete, a CEO, president of a country, they will tell you that they've had mentors along the way, and they will tell you that you need it if you want to be highly, highly successful.
No, that's definitely, and that's the point I wanted for others to hear. You know, I sometimes get, I don't want to say tired, but like when I'm the individual keeps saying certain things, it's like it's a breath of fresh air getting somebody else to kind of, in their words, formulate a better description of it. So that's fantastic. So you moved up to, you went from firefighter to lieutenant first, correct? And then what was it, somebody else that nudged you to go from lieutenant to captain, or is that something that you wanted to do to better yourself?
Oh, great question. It was both. It was both. I'm always going to push myself, always. It doesn't have to be formal promotion, but when there's formal promotion in the journey, then why not? But it was also because of my long-term goals. Like, I had individuals come up to me and ask me, you know, where do you want to be in 5 years or 10 years? Do you see yourself whether it be a chief officer role, executive role. But it was not even so much about the role or the rank. It was about the influence on where I wanted to have that influence. So I've been a training officer for officially 3 years, but spent more or less much of the last 7 or 8 years attached to the training division. And my influence, my passion, where I believe I have the greatest knowledge and influence on others is doing something anywhere around training. And so my drive to continue to move up, whether it be from lieutenant to captain, was not necessarily because I wanted to become a captain. It was because when I go through and take on these other roles, I can take on more assignments, if you will, and have influence in things like training, which is what, like I said, I'm passionate about. And one can be passionate and, sorry, influential, at the firefighter and engineer level as well, and lieutenant level. I mean, absolutely. I just saw that, my ability to have greater influence organizationally and regionally, over the long term, I was going to be able to have that influence if I did go to a captain role, and maybe one day, maybe to a chief officer role. But it was following my passion and where I saw myself having greater influence later on down the road that helped me say, you know what, maybe I should take this next promotional exam, because one day maybe I'll become a training captain, maybe one day I'll become a chief officer, and maybe be a chief officer in the training division, which are all positions that I would aspire to take on one day. And these it's all about opportunity. Like, everything, what it comes down to is opportunity. If you don't, well, say take a promotion, if you don't take on an assignment, you are closing off an opportunity before it even opens. So I always tell people, like, open up and seek out as many opportunities as you can and make the decision of to take it or not take it later. Right? So, like, if there's a captain's test coming up or an engineer's test, like, maybe you didn't want to be an engineer, or now is not your quote unquote time, right? And time is very subjective as well. Put yourself out there, prepare for it. You're only going to become better. Test comes around, you have a change of heart. Okay, so be it. Don't take it. At least you will have trained along the way. You will have sought mentorship along the way. You would have bettered yourself in the position you are now. And so what? You didn't take the promotion, or you didn't take the test. Oh, well, you're better because of putting yourself in the process. And so, going back full circle to the question that you asked, is having an opportunity or opening up doors later that I saw, promoting from lieutenant to captain, I was allowing myself to potentially have more opportunities later.
Yeah. Okay. With that, with you being a company officer, was there any challenges that you're willing to share for others to listen to, once you assume that role? Because I could tell you, like, for me, I finally got to the rank that I've dreamed about doing for a while. The only kicker is every once in a while I'll have to play substitute, and it's not my forte. I can do the job, but it's one of those things, like, it's a different. Like, for me, it's a different role because, like, I find myself, like, a couple shifts ago, I had to ride the seat the captain was off, and we had a medical call, and I found myself wanting to interact with the patient, but I'm like, oh, that's not my role anymore. I have to supervise these other three that are doing patient care, and they're doing an awesome job. And my role is to just stand back, wait on EMS, like, make sure the scene is good for everybody. But it's like full circle. Like, I want to be engaged, but that's not my role. But I also don't want to be that officer that's like, hey, you're an officer. You're not a firefighter. You're still a firefighter, but you're not a firefighter like EMT. Like, this is not your role. So was it like that for you when you became a the man, the company officer?
Absolutely. Like, I mean, I struggle even to this day, right? Because we all heard the saying, a company officer is the lead training officer for the crew, right? Like, not the training division. Yes, the training division is overarching in charge of training for the department, but every company officer leads the day. They lead the training. They need to be experts. They need to know how to manage their time. They need to know how to manage schedules. So they need to have that, more or less, that expertise, but then that drive as well, because they can make or break a crew. They can make or break one's development. So when you're talking about that dynamic, absolutely, is that hands-off approach is challenging, because you went from one day being, the lead EMT, the one day making, whatever it may be, leading the extrication with the tools and right into the, you know, into the car or whatever it may be. And you know, you're coming out for one day, you're taking that step back, right? So that transition is hard. It really is. And to kind of answer your question kind of in a different manner, I tell people all the time that like fighting a fire, you know, going to a cardiac arrest, that's easy. Meaning it's very black and white, right? We jump on the rig, get to the call, you compressions, you're on the defib unit, me, I'm talking to the family, I got the you know, I got the tablet. You know, you go to a fire, hey, you take a hand line, you you know, take the plug, you know, meet you at the front door, we'll wait for a standby team, and we'll go inside. Right? That's it's very we train on that from the academy to the daily operations every single day. Where the challenges, and I don't even know if challenge is necessarily the right word, but where the work comes into play is in the house, right? Like I had, and I'm going to credit Eric Rossoff, law enforcement officer, 30 plus years out of California, and he says these words. He says, "You can lose your life on the fire ground, but you can lose your life in the firehouse." And what he meant by that was like, yeah, on the fire ground, yeah, if you aren't safe, you're not, you know, following operations, and you're not, at performing your job, if you will, competently, you can get hurt and get killed. But in the firehouse is where you can lose your reputation. And so talking about the transition is like we have to deal with conflict in the house. You're in charge of dealing with conflict in the house. You know, you're in charge of making sure that the crew gets along. You're in charge of making sure, offensive comments get, get stopped immediately. You're in charge of those types of things. You're the adult in the room now, right? And so it's another thing that I tell people too is it's easy being a company officer when you have the most competent firefighters, respectful firefighters in the house, because you'll never have an issue. But that's not leadership. Leadership comes into play when you're being tested. Leadership comes into play when you have, a firefighter that's struggling and you have to get them through, their competencies as a recruit firefighter, probation firefighter, when they're going through a family issue at home and they're bringing the baggage to work. It's your job and to lead and to help people get through these things. Getting people over humps, getting people through performance improvement plans, right? I mean, it's easy to say to somebody, yeah, you're not cutting it, let's fire you. It's even harder to say, yeah, you're struggling. How can I help you not struggle? How can I help you pass the next test? How can I help you get past probation? That's where leadership comes into play. It is so easy to just write somebody off because they didn't perform on XYZ on one given day. It takes real leadership to get somebody past that hump. So in answering your question, the true challenge in my opinion in the transition of becoming a company officer is now you are in charge of the development of other people. As a firefighter, you're not in charge of anybody but yourself in regards to their development. When I have somebody struggling, that's my fault. I need to help them not struggle. And I know we'll talk about probably some ownership later. We'll talk about training a little bit later, but it comes down to when you get pinned as a company officer and you take that oath, that re-oath again, because we all take an oath when we first get hired, is you're also accepting the role of making sure other people become developed throughout their career and reach their potential. And if you don't, you're only doing a part of your job. If you become a company officer and what you're there for is running the calls and that's it, you're missing the bigger part of the position. And that's making sure you and everyone around you is becoming developed, reaching their potential, and their needs are met.
As far as when you decide to move to that company officer rank, it's not about you anymore, right? Because I believe we have a good number of individuals who are losing sight of that. They're like, oh, I want to be. And most people that I talk to, when I ask, hey, why did you become a company officer? Man, I want to say like 50% say, because I didn't want to work for this individual. And I get that because we do have bad company officers out there, but that's in every single aspect of life. That's not just holding into the fire service. So my question to you is, you mentioned it. I think you hit it spot on where the company officer position is about developing those underneath of you. But sadly, we have individuals that look at it for title, rank, less work. For some reason, I don't understand how you're going to have less work to do as a company officer. And, you know, they still think it's about them. It's me, 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 when it's more for we. So what's your take on what key piece of advice would you give to somebody who is thinking about the company officer role?
Oh, fantastic question. I love this question. Thank you. Number one is prepare. If you want to be a company officer, you have to prepare to start doing more work. Meaning, if you're comfortable as firefighter, in the jump seat, if you're comfortable where you're at being in the driver role, you're comfortable in your position and not yet in a company officer or management role, then stay there. Because prepare to jump to a company officer role to do more. Because if you don't have that mindset and you expect, want, or plan to do less when you get promoted, number one, you're doing it for the wrong reasons and you will not be effective. Right? Will you get through the day? Sure. Will you get a higher pay and boost your pension a little bit more and maybe do a little less of the hose work because you're not on the hose line anymore, less patient interaction because now you have the tablet, you're not taking the blood pressure, you're not doing the compressions. Sure, that's objective. That is true. But you will not be the leader and person that you should be, nor are you going to be the company officer that you were promoted to be. So my advice would be, if you want to be a true leader, you have to prepare your mind to say, I am ready to start doing more work. And then when you get into the role, you should be doing more work. You should be working harder than your firefighters, right? You should be the last one to bed. Why? Because you're still tidying up everything from the day. In the morning, they might be doing the rig checks, but you're planning out the entire day. You're planning out, the training plan. You're planning out the development of, what's going on next shift too. Right? You're in addition to writing up everything else that's going on in the firehouse and the station, the apparatus, the conflict resolution that you're dealing with, all the administrative work, all the phone calls from the chiefs. Like, you should be the most tired at the end of the day as a company officer. And I truly believe that. I'm not just saying that right here. Like, it's 9:30 at night, 10 o'clock at night, and I'm at my station and I'm exhausted and I'm not done yet. I'm mentally exhausted. I mean, I'm not sitting here saying that we ran a fire and and nine other calls and two of them were car wrecks, and that's why I'm tired. No, I'm saying we ran a few calls, but I'm saying I'm tired because of the mental capacity that it took to train my people, to find out what's going on, to help meet their needs, to complete the needs that I have, because I have my own needs as well, to attend to the needs of headquarters and the chief officers that are asking, for our crew to do XYZ. So I'm tired. And yes, that's a company officer's role. So if you're not ready to take on an exhaustive role as a leader, then you're not ready to be a company officer.
Facts. Okay. One thing I want to hit on because you were a fortunate to be a part of it. The training division, right? Whether you're a chief of training or a captain of training, or you have a cadre of members that form your training division. This statement, I want you to tell me if I'm lying or not. The training division is not responsible for continuing growth and education for firefighters. To me, that's the company officer's job, correct?
100%. And I think that's where people miss. Because, in my opinion, this is just my opinion. Like, I try not to get too extreme, but training and mentoring is where I live in my career. Like, training and mentoring is my passion. It's something that I will do for the remainder of my career, whether I'm in a formal training division role or, finish out my career as a company officer. But yes, to reiterate, the training division is not responsible for any individual nor crew's training. They are responsible because I've been in the training division. I've developed curriculum, I've trained curriculum, I've done all the feedback, administering everything. I, was responsible for training division when the COVID-19 pandemic hit. They're not responsible for individual crews. They're the 10,000 foot view. So what's important to remember is the company officer is a training officer. You need to have the knowledge, skills, the ability, the creativity. I'll go ahead and say the creativity. And to elaborate a little bit on that, like, not every fire department has a training tower, we'll say. In fact, my organization didn't have a training tower until 3 years ago. 300 square miles we covered, and at this time we're a 12 station fire department, and we never had a training tower in the history of its existence. Now we do have one training tower, but it's still 45, 60 minutes away from some of our outer lying stations, so it's not even feasible for us to even get to that tower. But where I'm going with that is we hear a lot of excuses from individuals that also say, well, how do we train? We don't have a tower. And I'm thinking, like, since when did you need a tower to do EMS training? When did you need a tower to pull hose? When did you need a tower to do rescue drills, search and rescue, ladder drills. You don't. You know, I've spent, in fact, I've worked with zero assignments at a station that was near a tower. So where I go with that is, if you're going to become a company officer one day, you need to have the knowledge of how to train, but you need to have the creativity of building training for your crew so it's realistic and so it's relatable, if you will. And your crews understand the why. You don't ever want a crew out there to say, why are we doing this? We would never do this. This is so unrealistic. But you only do that by having the creativity, but then the knowledge. So if you don't have a passion, you don't have the skill set yourself. Another thing that I'll talk about too, as we talk about training, is like, if you're not willing to lead by example, if you're not the example, how do you expect somebody else to do it? Like, if you're like, hey, we're gonna do this drill now and we gotta be creative, we don't have a training tower, we're gonna do XYZ. But you can't even do it yourself. You can't even explain the why behind it. What are we even doing? So, I mean, leadership is all about leading by example. It's about knowing why you do things, but then being willing to also demonstrate why and how it applies. Otherwise, you're just going to be ineffective.
Yes, sir. Okay. In your opinion, what does the term aggressive mean to you?
Oh, aggressive. I like this question. So, I mentioned earlier that I follow a lot of highly successful people, inspirational people, we'll say. And Nick Saban, obviously legendary coach of, college football and arguably the best coach ever. He actually said these words. He says, passion will always look aggressive to the unmotivated. And what he meant by that, or what I believe he meant by that is aggressive sounds very, has a kind of like a connotation behind it that I was like, oh, that's too much. But too much for who? Like, we want aggressive firefighters, I believe, right? We want, when we talk about sports, we want people that are aggressive. We hear that word whenever we're talking about like high stress, high impact, a lot on the line. We hear the competition, we hear the word aggressive, and it's a positive thing, not a negative thing. But when you think about aggressive, when we talk about whether it be in the firehouse, the fire station, you hear people say, oh, that person's too aggressive, or that person's aggressive. And one person will look at that as like, is that a bad thing? I don't understand what you mean. And some people will look at that like that's a negative thing. So going with the quote, what Saban said is like aggression or aggressive might sound negative to the individual that is okay with the status quo. They're okay with, just meeting the bare minimum standards. Championship teams like Nick Saban, or whether it be like, a Michael Jordan, a Kobe Bryant, or Tom Brady, like aggression and aggressive is in their back pocket. That's where they live. And they wouldn't be at their caliber without it. And so aggressive, I look at as a positive word. And so to me, you got to have some kind of aggression or aggressive in terms of your own self, how would you say it? Definition, if you will, because all it really means is that you are pushing to become better. And that's what it means to me.
Okay. Training, more so outside training. Like I'm pretty sure, every single fire department organization within the United States has a training menu, a training regimen, quarterly training, monthly training, weekly training, whatever the case may be. Especially if you have a training division, they're always pushing out things for the company officers to do, kind of giving them that idea of creativity. But when it comes to outside training, going outside of the walls of your organization, learning something new, potentially to bring it back in, may not be the entire thing, but maybe bits and pieces. How important is it for others to step outside of their box?
It's again, I know I've used the word critical a few times. It's 100% required. A lot of chiefs have told me this. I've had some individuals, I'll just name them here, whether it be Michael DiStefano out of Jupiter, Florida, Steve Shaw, Anthony Castro's out of the Bay Area. There's a lot of individuals that talk about this, exactly what you're talking about. You have to go outside. You have to, because otherwise you're in your bubble. You think that everything that you do, the way that you operate, is the way, and everyone else is the wrong way. And that is, there's nothing that could be further from the truth. I'm not saying you should go outside and go take a class and now it's the new best thing. You bring everything back to your department. You try to change everything your department to be because of this 2 day class you went to. That's absolutely not what I'm saying. What I'm saying is you can gather perspective on understanding why things are done the way you guys do it in your region, or why, you can't do XYZ, or you can understand new tips and tricks of how to do something, and you can implement a couple things on your end. So going outside your organization is critical, so you don't get just secluded into your own world, because perspective matters. If we sit around and say that we are doing it the best, what you're literally saying is all these other fire departments that might be busier than you, that have phenomenal leaders, that have robust programs, what you're literally saying is that they're doing it wrong and you're doing it right, which is not true. Everyone's doing a form of what's right or what's correct. It's just how it gets integrated into your systems now. And so, if anything, going outside your organization just to learn what's out there, what other people are doing, understanding the why and the why not, so why your department might not be doing it, is only going to benefit you. In addition, the other aspect that I'll mention about going outside your organization, which I've hit on this already, is you get to meet new people. You get to build connections. You get to build relationships. You build enough of those relationships, later on, you can pick up the phone call and say, "Hey, this is so and so. Remember, we met at this conference out at FDIC, or out in Florida, or out in Texas, or out in California. And, I heard you were talking about this, the way that you operate. Can I ask some questions about that?" And before you know it, the relations that you built by going outside your organization for the duration of your career, you have this Rolodex, if you will, of contacts that you could reach out to, that you could pick up the phone and say, "Hey, help me solve this problem," or, "Hey, I know you have this issue. I know you guys have this policy over here. We're building this new policy. Do you mind sharing yours?" All it is about sharing of information and making yourself, but also all of our organizations and the fire service better. So going outside, necessary. And the listeners, what I'll say to them now is, if you've been in the fire service 2 years, 5 years, 10 years, and you can't remember the last time you went outside to take a class, first thing you should do when listening to this podcast is go search for an outside class. Go do it. In fact, bring someone else with you. I'll credit Steve Shaw again. He talks about the plus one mentality. Bring somebody else with you. When you're going to go take a class, why do it by yourself? Bring someone with you. Bring one of your buddies, bring your company officer, bring your engineer, bring your mentor, bring your fire chief. Say, "Hey, chief, I'm taking this class, at the city next door. It's a 1 day thing. I was hoping you can kind of, come take it with me." Bring others up with you when you're going outside. Let other people be a part of your learning journey. Don't have this newfound knowledge by yourself. Share it with others, experience it with others.
A buddy of mine, we kind of joke back and forth, and this is not a shot at my own organization, but every organization has its issues. But whenever we try to foster a slight change, firefighters hate two things: change and the way things are, right? Whenever
Absolutely.
we try to foster some sort of change and it doesn't occur, and it falls back to, well, it's because this is the way we've always done it. Me and my buddy have a coin. We kind of coined it. It's inbred. It's the inbred mentality. Like, why don't you want to change this? Because whatever the case may be, because I'm not comfortable, or because we've always done it this way. And it's one of those things that, to me, it's such a downer, man, for people who are trying to elevate their department. Because I know, like you mentioned, sports. I'm a huge sports person. Teams have to evolve in order to get better. I don't know of a team that has had the same playbook since the 1960s that still work to this day. Like, plays evolve, teams evolve, the way these players are training has evolved. And it's like, why can't the fire service do the same? Why do we still have people, when you try to do a little something, something, they either will look down on you, they'll make fun of you, and it's like, it's always a question of why that is. And I truly think it's because that individual just doesn't know, and they don't want others to know that they don't know. And it's maybe because they've been here for a while that they should know, or they're holding a rank that it's like, you don't know how to do this, and you're such and such rank.
Absolutely. And you totally hit it. Like, fire service is obviously traditionally known for, not change. But what I'll offer to the listeners here today is, without change, there is no progress. Think about that. like progress, positive progress, right? Well, I mean, sure, negative change, whatever, but to get better at anything, that's change. So if you don't change, you literally, we're talking definition here. I'm not, this is not subject, this is by definition. You cannot be better because changing is required to elevate yourself. But secondly, what I'll mention to you, it's very it's cultural, but it's also leadership based, meaning establishing a culture of change takes leadership. Meaning a good leader in a fire station, we'll use the crew level just as the example. A company officer can influence their crew. A company officer, of a 300, 500 person fire department is not going to change the culture and the mindset of an organization, but it starts with each individual. So if you get an accumulation of a bunch of leaders at the company officer level, at the station level, that are trying to make little changes, well, what happens when other company officer stations also adopt that change? That's where organizational change takes place. But you got to set expectations as well. Like, I can't come in and say, I'm going to change the entire way our organization does training. Well, good luck to me. It's not going to happen. But I could change the way we do things in-house. Obviously, following policies and procedures, obviously, respectfully, and all that good stuff, following the core mission and the core values of our organization, obviously. But if we aren't making those positive changes and that mindset shift, we're not going to see change. And then that's where things just stay comfortable. Because if things haven't changed in a while and everyone's okay with the status quo, the leader of the pack is okay with the status quo looks good. It looks appealing. So if you really want to see change, I would encourage everybody that to just think about the definition of itself. If you want to become better, you have to change. I will emphasize too that not all change is good. Like, if I want to become so good at something, am I going to fail along the way? Absolutely. Am I gonna, you run into some roadblocks that I never saw coming? Absolutely. But that's also a part of the process. If I want to get there, there will be roadblocks and failures along the way. But again, going back to the fundamental definition of change, if you want to become better, change needs to be a part of it. And so you have to embrace it.
Yes, sir. When it comes to leadership, whether company officer, which you are, or chief officer, which you may aspire to be, you mentioned it not just a few seconds ago about how the leadership, the being comfortable, I also like to call it as complacency. Complacency is one of those things you don't even realize you're doing it. And depending on how long you've been doing it, to me, complacency has its own room. Its bed's made. It has its own refrigerator, it has its own locker, because things, the way we do things and we don't want to change, complacency is there. So with that, when it comes to leadership, what does leadership look like to you? And as a company officer now, what kind of leader did you want to be once you got to that level?
Oh, that's such a that's a large question to ask. It's leadership is it's so many things. At the end of the day, we can quote John Maxwell, right? Entrepreneur, business person, author on leadership, studied research leadership for 30 plus years. But leadership is influence, good or bad, right? Good or bad, right? There's bad leadership and there's good leadership. But what leadership is the influence on others or influence on things. And so there's a Simon Sinek that talks about this. Bad leaders don't get fired, they get followed. I mean, how true is that statement? And good leaders as well, right? Good leaders is what we want, but leadership is about having followership. I'm gonna talk about followership here in just a second too. Like, if a leader doesn't have anyone following them, listening to them, walking behind them, following their footsteps, paying attention to them, I mean, they're not leading anybody, right? And John Maxwell also says this: if no one's following you, you're just walking by yourself. And so leadership is literally having people that are actually paying attention and taking what you say to heart and actually believing things that you say. So that's all leadership is. And so it comes in all shapes and forms. It's like, if I want to be influential or be a leader in the, we'll just use the, the same context that we've been using, over the last hour, is training. If I want to have influence on training, I have to have followers and listening and paying attention and believing that what I'm saying works and is true. Otherwise, I'm not a leadership in training. I'm just a person talking about training. And that goes with any other aspect. When you're leading an organization, are people following the mission? Are they believing in the mission? Are they wanting to do good? Are they wanting to better themselves so that they can themselves further the mission? And if they're not, and they're okay with status quo, they're being complacent, then you don't have enough leaders in the organization. Because leadership, if you're following something, it should be natural. Like, I'm a leader, but I'm a follower. Like, you have to be a follower before you can be a leader. So I'm always following somebody, right? If the fire chief of an organization is only considers himself a leader, not a follower, well, are they actually a leader, right? Or that goes with any aspect in life or business, industry, whatever you want to call it. So as far as your question about, what does leadership look like to me, or what is it? It's just simply having the influence to do good. And like I said, the Simon Sinek quote that I mentioned a few minutes ago, it just hits home so hard that leadership, good or bad, people will follow you, right? Whether blindly or, or willingly. And that we, in any organization, we don't get rid of bad leaders. They exist everywhere. But it's important to also understand, it's important to recognize and understand that who you're following. And if you can be a good follower first, then you are at the first stage of becoming a good leader. Because we were all followers at once. Think about the fire service by itself. Like, we were all firefighters before we became engineers, drivers, and mentors and officers, right? And so if you aren't good at following and listening and paying attention and, and ingraining and, memorizing, if you will, the work ethics of others and paying attention, how can we be a good leader? Because we weren't even setting the example. So I hope that leaders will always continue to follow. I hope leaders really understand the importance of having positive influence. And yeah.
Okay. Another key, at least in my opinion, another key component that comes with being a firefighter. You mentioned leadership, and that's leadership at all ranks, because we all know you don't have to have a specific title to lead. But one thing too, which I think a good number of departments are doing, are trying to strive towards. But one thing I know that, in my opinion, I feel like we need more, a more of a push in is physical fitness. So, how important is physical fitness in regards to what we do as firefighters, in your opinion?
Oh, I mean, fundamental. It's fundamental. I mean, you can go back to the early days of the fire service, whether it be 50 years ago, 40 years ago, 30 years ago. Fitness has always been fundamentally a part of the profession. And I'll go to the saying, like, we talked about leadership, followership, leading by example. We talked about that today. And I'll be very, blunt when I say this. Like, no one wants to work for somebody that's completely out of shape. Like, right, like, think about that for a minute. And we talk about leading by example. Like, when I do a drill with whether it be my recruits, my probationary firefighters, even my engineers, like, when I say, let's do this drill, I'll demonstrate it first, especially if they've never done it before. Like, I can't say, hey, grab this, go do that, make sure it's here, make sure it's blah. And they're like, huh? Like, I don't even know what this is. So, you have to lead by example first. And they have to see that. They have to know that you're willing to do that. Otherwise, everything is just, hey, go tell, you become a dictator at that point. And we're talking about leadership. Leadership, I mean, we could go through theory, we could go through all that. But at the end of the day, a lot of it just comes down to, are you willing to do it yourself? Don't expect something of others that you aren't yourself or aren't willing to do it yourself. So when we talk about physical fitness, like, again, we talked about company officers or training officers. Company officers are also very knowledgeable with physical and mental wellness. Like, if they don't take to heart physical fitness, how can they tell others or preach upon others that physical fitness is important? Like, you can't sit there and say those two things at once. Hey, physical fitness is important. I need you to be physically fit to be able to do XYZ drill at this amount of time. If we have an actual fire, you need to be able to do it in this amount of time standard. But I myself can't do it. Like, I mean, think about that for a minute. Like,
Yeah.
if we're gonna impose standards And we could even go even more generic. If we're going to impose certain expectations, and I think that's one thing we don't talk about enough in the fire service and company officers, is what are your expectations? And if you don't have expectations, well, then how can you expect others to perform at a high level? Or first and foremost, you got to have those expectations. And now going back to physical fitness, like you have to walk the walk yourself. You have to, preach upon others. And it goes beyond the call, right? It goes beyond running the call and being able to, pull X amount of, equipment up some stairs in the fire and the heat, for the third time that night, right? That goes without saying. But how about being physically fit for your family when you go home the next day? Like, right? So Eric Rossoff, who I mentioned earlier, he talks about it's one thing to be physically fit and well for the job, but it's a company officer's job to make sure if their firefighters, their crew, goes home physically and mentally well when they go clock out at 8 o'clock the next morning. We need to be taking care of these people so when they go home at 8, they're present for their family, right? It's not all about what you're here to do today from 8 o'clock to 8 o'clock. We need to perform at a high level, physically, mentally, emotionally, spiritually, all the above. But when you go home, if you are of no use to your family because now you're beat up completely, you're no use. And so we wonder why in the fire service we're dying at a faster rate, higher than ever. Divorce rates are still through the roof. Is because we need to continue and become better about making sure physical fitness and mental wellness is at the top of our, at the forefront of what we're doing every single day. But going back to what you said, it doesn't just begin because I think every individual needs to take it upon themselves. Like we can talk about extreme ownership later. It's every individual that need to say, physical fitness is important to me, no matter if, my company officer and fire chief are completely out of shape, haven't, been in the weight room in 6 years. Like, right? Like, it's still incumbent upon that individual to say, no, it's going to be important to me regardless of what my surroundings show me. But then to the next level, and then it's not even the next level, it's still on the same level. Those company officers, chief officers, those formal leaders in the organization need to be presenting themselves by leading by example. And if they don't, we wonder why the problem exists.
For sure. Yeah. The expectations, standards, looking in the mirror, that all kind of goes hand in hand with
Absolutely.
physical fitness. And I've said it before, I don't mean that we all need to look a certain way, because I know a few firefighters who could be calendar models for a specific month because their physique is fantastic. But you put them in gear and you put them on air, they suck that thing down in 10 minutes. And it's like, there's to me, there's we should all be fit. What
Correct.
does that look like depends on the individual, because I'm not expecting you to look like Arnold Schwarzenegger back when he was in his 20s and 30s. I expect you to be able to do a decent amount of work with one cylinder.
Absolutely.
And potentially, hey, I got to give you another one real quick before you go to rehab. I need you to go a little bit further. To me, that's where, you mentioned it. You got to walk the walk. You know what I mean? And it's unfair to the citizens if by throwing a 24 and grabbing a few other tools, you're spent, you're gassed. There's something wrong there.
And then exactly, there's something wrong there. And I think that's one thing we talked about creativity. We talked about training at the company level. That's something that the training division is not in charge of. Like we do on my crews, we literally find days throughout the year because we don't run fires every day. I'm throwing it out there.
Right, right.
There aren't fire departments that run fires every day. We're not one of them. But sometimes we literally pick days where we're in full gear and we're doing a drill slash a workout in full gear just to push ourselves. Because if we wait, because it's different, like you said, like just because you can go in the gym and push weights for 45 minutes and do cardio for an hour and then go sit in a hot yoga for another 30 minutes and I worked out for 2.5 hours today and I was sweating, I lost 9 pounds at the end and I could do it again tomorrow. That is a level of fitness, but it's not directly relatable. So my point is sometimes it's literally getting out there in what the simulated environment is. We talked about not necessarily always having a training tower with a burn prop and blah blah blah, where you could literally put yourself to 600 degree heat and training through crawling through the tower, blah blah blah. But sometimes it's literally putting on your gear, coming up with some goofy, and yes, I say goofy, just some kind of goofy training regimen where you're inside the fire station, blacked out mask, throwing ladders, pulling hose and dummies for 15 minutes, and making sure you have that capability, that capacity. And that's what we literally caught in our station is. is today are we're training not for an actual objective. Like some people will say, are we doing ladders today? Are we doing hose today? Are we doing EMS drills today? Today we're just putting on our gear and moving around to make sure that we can. We haven't run a taxing call in over a month with our gear on. How about we just put on our gear on this given day, and that is our drill, of 20 minutes of just pushing ourselves physically to see where we're at. Are we sucking the bottle down in 9 minutes? Where you used to be at 15 minutes at the same drill just last year. What's going on? So that just goes along with, being creative in the firehouse and making sure fitness, you don't have to always have a certain objective to accomplish to get something done. You could do something because okay, this gives us a little benchmark of where we're at, and that's okay too.
When it comes to ownership, there are a few individuals who believe that the organization they work for needs to provide them with every single class, certification, things like that. Meaning, what I'm saying is, yes, I'm sure every organization makes sure that they give the minimum standard for all employees. But we all know times are different. Organizations have different what's the word I'm trying to say? They have different budgets.
Correct.
They have a different amount that they can invest in the person. What I find funny now is sometimes if an organization goes, hey, there's an opportunity for this class, but due to the part of the year where our budget's kind of tight, we need you to take it upon yourself to take some time, maybe spend a little money to benefit you. Man, that right there is, it's like opening a can of worms. I've been fortunate where I have a training chief that supports my ideas. And here not too long ago, I had Chief Ashby from Indianapolis come up to North Carolina to talk about a leadership, like having ownership within yourself. And the amount of people that asked, are they going to pay me? Is she going to do this like live stream where I could watch it? And it's like, no, you have to physically come to this event, this venue, and listen 2 hours out of your day to better yourself. And not shockingly, the numbers within my organization were horrible, horrible. We had a lot of outside people come in. And I'm sure I'm not the only one that sees that, but you mentioned that extreme ownership. I feel like, and I get it, and I've always said this before, everything's expensive. People have to work. I'm not trying to take money out of your pocket, but it just seems like if your organization isn't going to pay me for this, or I want to go to this class, but they just denied me, so I'm not going, like that just seems to be the trend that we're facing.
Wow, I could answer this question in 1 hour because I love this question because we see it too. We see it too. I'm going to start off with this is where I believe going outside your comfort zone and maybe, putting yourself in a day shift assignment for a little bit, go work an admin position, when a day shift assignment comes out to work 6 months at this assignment, you get to gain perspective of what some individuals have called it like to understand how the business of the organization works, right? If all we know in our career is riding the rig, that's all we'll know. We'll never understand how the training division is run. You'll never understand why decisions are made at the executive level. You'll never understand, why when we say, I can't believe why the department doesn't pay me to do X. Well, of course you don't know why, because all you know is operations. So if you have in your career put yourself in a position to learn the why, you will have a different perspective and you'll also have a different appreciation. Because I think we get too far away from every organization. Now, I'm not going to say every single one. Most organizations are doing the best that they can with the resources that they have, whether it be within budget, whether it be within policy, whether it be, the city council decision making, whatever it may be, right? If we're already in the mindset of like the department organization, the city council doesn't care about us, they don't know how to prioritize, we've already lost. Our mindset is in the wrong. Like we are doing the best that we can. I'm not even speaking from the executive level. I'm a captain in operations. I'm not speaking from the executive level, but I have an appreciation that our organizations are doing the best that they can. They're doing the best that we can. But I'm going to go a little further because we talked about, are you mentioned that like people are in the mindsets of like if the department's not paying me, it must not be important or they should be paying me. I agree with that to a certain extent. So I'm going to go and offer a little perspective here. When we hire recruits and probationary firefighters and they're struggling, what do we always say to them? Well, they better seek the help. They better get out there and take their own time. They better be, taking some equipment home or working on XYZ on their off time. On the weekends, they should be staying up till midnight studying the books and blah, blah, blah. Are they on overtime when they're studying the books till midnight at home? Are they submitting for 8 hours of overtime? I'll give you the answer, listeners. The answer is no, they're not. So why is it that we expect probationary firefighters, newer people, to take the extra time, their own time outside of overtime to become better? But we don't expect that of ourselves, right? I'm aspiring to become an engineer, a lieutenant. I'm a struggling chief officer, and I need help. And there's classes that will help me. Oh, but the department's not helping me, so I'm not going to do it. So why is it that we have a different expectations for like it's crazy to me. It's like it should be the same. If I expect a probationary firefighter to go outside, just the work hours to become better, and I'm trying to become better in whatever I'm pursuing, I would expect the same level of commitment. Like I better be able to put my own time in. I better open up my book till midnight on a Saturday on my day off, and I'm not going to put in for overtime, nor do I expect to put in for overtime. But I also believe that's the conversations that we're having or not having, we'll say, at the firehouse. We talked about leaders. This is all about leadership. What kind of conversations are happening at the kitchen table? Like, are we continuing that narrative, that dialogue of like, oh yeah, the department should be paying us for everything? Because here's one thing we talked about: leadership is just about having followers. People are listening. There's good leadership and there's bad leadership. If there's an individual in the fire station at the kitchen table talking about everything that's wrong with the fire station or the firehouse or the department, and you have new firefighters coming in, they know nothing, right? New firefighters don't know anything other than what's heard. So now they have now adopted that mindset of like, oh, okay, because we're not having classes on teaching new people on how to think, like, right? And so they're getting their knowledge informally at the kitchen table. That's what on those conversations. So now these individuals have been with the organization a year now, 2 years, 3 years. What they've heard is what other people are saying. Like, yeah, don't go to that class. The department should be paying us for that. But this is where influence and leadership comes into play. We need to be having those conversations of like, hey, yeah, the department's not, instead of, someone complaining at the kitchen table about how a department should be paying for everything, we need to be, the leaders in the firehouse should be flipping that narrative. Yes, guys, you're right. Let's say, hey, everybody come on in here and, let's sit at the table for a minute. I heard something. Let's unpack that a little bit. Yeah, the department can't pay for that. Here's why, and how about we, step up our game and, take this class on our own. Should the department be paying for it? Arguably, sure. We had there's a class happening around here just next week, and I have an aspiring lieutenant, a brand new acting lieutenant, has taken this class. It's a tactics 101 class, if you will. And I said, perfect, I'll sign up, I'll go with you. And I just emailed three other people to come with us. We're making a group effort. None of us are getting paid for it. But I think what we're missing is there's not enough, and I'm not saying this is intentional, right? We don't know what we don't know. Our company officers and leaders of today, how many of them have went through formal leadership development? How many of them have went through intentional training to become inspirational in the firehouse? Because people follow these people. We promote them, people are following them by default because they are the quote unquote formal leader of the house. So we need to put ourselves in a position to where we are just having those conversations. Like, shame on me if I hear stuff like that in the firehouse and I say nothing. And even more shame on me if I hear those things at the firehouse about, oh, the department this and this, and I even tag along and throw stuff on top of it. It's our job as leaders to simmer down some of those conversations, but correct some of those conversations, but redirect that energy and say, you know what, this is where we're at now. Maybe in a year or two in the new budget cycle, maybe this will change. But thank you for bringing up that conversation. Thank you for bringing up this topic. Let's bring it to labor management. We'll talk about this. Maybe we'll get a change in the next contract whatsoever. But for now, this is where we're at. Probation and firefighters, we expect them to take these extra classes. Why can't we? What class are you looking for? XYZ? Awesome. Let me go with you. We've now reframed it, and now we're instilling a little bit of not just confidence, but inspiration in some of these people that say, all right, yeah, I see it. I see it. Because we're doing ourselves no good if we're just sitting there accepting what's being said all the time if it's negative. So, going back to what you said, yeah, it happens everywhere. It happens everywhere, but we need to change. And actually, I'll give one last parable on it because I love this. I don't want to be missed without saying this. We're in a profession that is high stakes, right? High stakes. Lives are on the line, property's on the line, a lot going on. Kobe Bryant, I mentioned his name a couple times today. I'll say it again. He was caught in the gym at times, at like 6 a.m. Like he said, "Hey, let's go work. Can I work out with you tomorrow, Kobe?" "Sure. What time?" "6 a.m. I'll be there." You know, the group of friends will get there at 6 a.m. Kobe's been in there for 2 hours. He's already sweating. And guys are like, "I thought we said 6." He's like, "Yeah, start at 6. I'm gonna start at 4." And that's what it was for him. He's like, I'm gonna beat you. Like, you're not gonna be better than me." Like, and that's not a negative thing. It's not like he aspires other people to be bad. He just has higher expectations of himself. Meaning, yeah, practice is from 6 to 8, but for me, it's from 4 to 8. We have, you know, 2 days. You know, there's another session from 5 to 6. Sure, I'm gonna do another session by myself from 1 to 2, and then again a 5 to 6. So that way, when a year goes by, 5 years go by, he's like, "I've already developed myself way more than everybody else. Like, no one else can catch up to me." And the context of the fire service is not about catching up, it's just about continued development. Like, you can have 10 years worth of experience in 7 years if you're intentional about how you develop yourself. You don't have to wait 10 years to get 10 years of development, but it takes that proactive thought process. You have to be willing to do it. Don't wait for a chief to tell you, or don't wait for a budget to say, here's some extra classes. Isn't the investment in yourself enough? Like we're in a high stakes profession. Let's be fortunate on what we have, but let's go beyond that. Let's do a little bit more. And you do that little bit more day in and day out. After 5 years, you're gonna thank yourself. You're gonna thank yourself. And so that's my take.
No, preaching a good word, man. I mean, you know, I think as firefighters, we all, I would, I'd be comfortable to say most firefighters like some sort of sports, and I'm sure they have a favorite athlete. And just look at who great athletes are, their work ethic. They didn't become great by sitting on the couch. They didn't become great by making fun of another individual's work ethic. You know, firefighters who train in their gear seem to be looked at differently, or I can't believe they're doing it. It's 90 degrees today. Why are they doing that? Because they're trying to better themselves. I'm not telling you that you have to do that, but I always find it hilarious when firefighters throw shade at other firefighters for trying to better themselves, and then they have the nerve, and it because I can say this because I've had experience in this, and then they have the nerve where, when they talk to their children, meaning the firefighters who are throwing shade, they talk to their own kids. I hear them having conversations about little Timmy or Johnny or Megan, whatever the case. Hey, in order to get better at this sport, you got to put in the work. And it's just kind of like that also goes with the fire service. You're making fun of that person for being out there throwing ladders in 90 degrees, but yet, you know, you're sitting on the couch because you're comfortable. But then whenever your kid's struggling, you tell them, hey, you got to put in the work. Like, do you understand what you're just saying? And a lot of them don't. And then when you call them out on it, oh Lord,
Oh yeah, no, you can't do that.
it's a whole nother story.
Oh
Right.
yeah. And
Right.
that's it is very interesting, and it's I'd love to do the psychology. Like, I'm in my doctorate program now, and I've yet to establish what I'm going to do my final paper on, but I'd love to do something on the psychology of that, right? Like, what is it like? Because what you just said is so spot on. We have expectations in one area here, but in the exact same context, but just you bring it over here, it's a different. And it's like there's a psychology behind that, and that it'd be intriguing to know why, where that stems from. And it's some of it's cultural. You know, a lot of us, you know, you've done 19 years in the fire services. This is what we've known for a good portion of our life now. Once you get that, right? You're in your first 5 years, so you get hired at 25, 30, you know, you still have only done it for a small portion of your career. But once you've got 20 years in, now it's become a part of a majority of your life, if you will. And so it'd be intriguing to understand a little bit about what gets us to that kind of thinking, if you will, because what you just said is spot on. You see it all the time. You have an expectation that's, but over here it's a different. It's like, why is that? But yeah.
Craziness, man. Crazy. I always I before I ask that before I ask this last question, I want to just see your take on it. Wellness and truly being there. I'm sure with your experiences, you've in your career and what we do for a living, we've seen the ups and downs of the fire service. We've seen things that you know, human beings aren't wired. Like what we do sometimes, what we have to experience and what we see, our brain's not wired to see that type of turmoil, that type of tragedy. But when it comes to truly being there for one another, what's your take on that? Because, I'm going to throw the word brotherhood, sisterhood out there, gets thrown out a lot. You hear it all over the place. And then these are the same people who won't check up on a fellow brother or sister or firefighter after they've gone through an experience, call wise. And it's like, oh, if they can't handle that, maybe they're in the wrong business, blah, 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 blah. So what's your take on what it means to truly being there for one another?
Oh, thank you. And I will start off with, I'm a union member myself, and I participate on the executive board on multiple levels in my career. I've served in many different levels, and so I'll start off with that. And because I appreciate everything the union has done for me, and I, without labor, fighting for the rights that we have in our organizations across country today, I wouldn't be where I'm at. But I would also say, in terms of the brotherhood, sisterhood, I do believe we throw it out there too loosely. And what I mean by that is, like, I love the fact that we can call each other that, because if you really do care about others, like, easily and quickly, good. We should love each other. We should care for each other. We should support each other. But if you don't know, for example, the name of my kids, can you really call me a brother? Like, right? Like, look, I have brothers. I have sisters. Like, they know, what I'm doing. They know my profession. They know what I'm, and, what extracurriculars I'm into. They're my brothers and sisters. But, like, if you can, and I don't mean this in a bad way, like, if you don't know the name of my family members, if you then, like, how can you be a brother? So what I mean by that is, like, it's not so much that I don't believe that you're not my brother, you're not my union sister. That's not what I'm saying. But I think we throw it out there so much because sometimes we don't have each other's back as much as we expected. Because you said, hey, you're my brother. But how about when I was struggling? You weren't there for me. Remember when I went through all that? And so it's like, if you were my brother, why wouldn't you support me? So I think we just need to be a little more intentional about, like, when we call each other brother and sisters, do we mean it? And if we do, let's just be intentional about what that means and how we show up for each other. And that's kind of where I'm going with that. As far as wellness, you can't help others become well if you aren't well yourself. Like, I see a therapist. I went through some struggles in my career, and I'm okay to be open about it. I went through some serious struggles when I went through, some workplace conflict a few years back, some serious struggles. And I sought a counselor. And I saw her monthly for a good 8 months, and then periodically after that. But the intention behind that was to help myself get well, because, again, I'm a company officer. I cannot be there and support others mentally, their development, help them be well if I'm not myself. I can't bring my baggage to work every day and, be a downer, and also not be motivated of an individual, and not have my mental aspect in the game and help others and respond to calls if I'm not well. So we need to be at the forefront of ourselves, each and every one of us. I'm not talking about just leaders, but especially leaders. What are we doing to make sure that we are well so that we can show up for our crews and the communities? And so wellness is something that we need to be holding ourselves accountable for. And when we see something wrong, right? Hey, what's going on? I see something's off. And then people will open up. And then when they open up, let's unpack that. How can I help you? Let's get you back to where 100% is. I recognize that a year ago you were doing just great, and over the last 8 months you've been dealing with whatever. Maybe it's an injury, maybe it's some, mental emotional thing. But let's get back to where your ideal is, and how can I support you in getting there? Because, again, wellness is something that we talk about. We talk about mental wellness. The fire service has made some quantum leaps in the area of mental wellness in the last 15 years. I think you and I would both agree with that. But we still have work to do because, again, I mentioned this earlier. We're company officers. How many of us were trained, not just to teach and to lead, like we talked about earlier, the lack of training? How many of us were trained to recognize wellness in others? How many of us were taught the importance of seeking others when we're struggling ourselves, in terms of whether it be peer support, EAP, seeking a counselor? Like, there is a stigma behind it, even to this day. Like, oh, what do you mean you're seeking counseling? Like, we've normalized it a little bit, but I'm okay to say that, I'll see a counselor, regularly for the rest of my life, because I know how important it is to be well for people I work with, but also my family and for myself. Like, I want to show up the best version of myself every single day, no matter if I'm at work or at home. I can only show up in the way that I want if I'm well. And so wellness is so important, and I would implore everyone that's listening here today to take their wellness seriously and take that next step. If you're struggling with something, go seek someone. But even then, you don't have to be struggling with something to focus on your wellness. You know, you can go seek a counselor right now and get a baseline, because it's about how you've changed down the road. It's not about your baseline being, you know, you're down in the dumps and now that's your baseline. We need to know where your baseline is. We need to know where you're thriving. And so in a year from now, in 20 years from now, we know what thriving is for you individually. So that's my thoughts on wellness.
There. Okay. I always like to ask the guests this last question. Where would you like to see yourself before you decide to hang it all up? It could be career goals, it could just be life goals, but I always like to just kind of hear what aspirations the guests have for themselves.
Oh, wow. Some serious reflection here. Most importantly, and I love the fire service. I love the profession. I love what it's given to me and my family. With that, and because of that, I have the opportunity to be with my kids and be present with my family, because, you know, we do have a fortunate schedule. But what I would like to be is my kids thriving in college somewhere, you know, hopefully, you know, playing some sort of sports, maybe getting some kind of a full ride or partial scholarship. At some, you know, college or university somewhere in the United States, and for me to travel with them, for them to invite me, you know, to those colleges, universities to visit at times, for me to watch them on the sidelines, you know, whether it be a, you know, some golf event, basketball event, track and field, swimming, whatever it is that they aspire, because they're athletes themselves. And, you know, I would love to be traveling the country with them, in the sports and, you know, their college endeavors. And so that's where I hope to be. I have an 8-year-old and a 4-year-old now, so we're still talking 10 and 14 years out before they hit those ages. As far as professionally, the only thing I care about professionally is having the influence when I leave, is that someone would actually say about me that I enjoyed working with him. I appreciated the way that he trained and mentored me. That's it. That's all I cared about. It doesn't matter to me about, I mentioned earlier about, like, I would love to have some kind of influence in the training division or on a larger scale. Sure, absolutely love that, but that's not what I care to have done before I hang it up. If I were to walk out tomorrow, all I would aspire is that someone appreciated, you know, the way that I treated them, the way that I trained and mentored them, and that's all that matters to me.
Okay. All right. Well, I gotta say, man, our conversation, the way you respond, the way you relate to things, it's been a fantastic listen. I think our mindsets are alike, and you know, that's the thing, you know, firefighters gravitate to who they're around. I could definitely say, like, if me and you were at the same station, I think that our paths would definitely be aligned. So my word to you is continue to keep going, continuing to better yourself. You know, you mentioned your family is important, and the biggest aspect, you know, that I think that I got from your last statement about that last question I asked you is the fire service isn't your end all be all. It's not your identity. I feel like we lose sight of that because we're trying, especially those that are trying to be good at the job, because hopefully we're all striving to be good at the job. Because, like my captain said it before, when you're good at it, it's fun. It's a fun job when you're good at it. There are things that I struggle in because I don't want to know it all. I'd like to stay in my lane. But one thing that just resonated with me was, you know, you mentioned it's not about you. Like, when you leave, you want others to be like, man, that was a squared up person. Berlin helped me when I needed this, that, or the other. So continue to keep moving forward. I had no doubt you'll do great things with the way your mindset is. And I do want to ask too, so others can listen to it. You know, you mentioned a lot earlier the shameless plug, which I'm totally fine with. Where can they listen to you? What is the name of your podcast? Where can people listen to your insights and the guests that you have on?
I appreciate that. I want to, if I may, I want to first start off and say thanking you for your time. And I'll say this to the listeners, you know, pay attention, right? There's resources. We talked a second ago about the department won't pay for certain things and blah, 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 the excuses that are out there. Okay. There are free resources at your fingertips. There are books that you could buy, Audibles. You could borrow a book from somebody else. You can click on Spotify, Apple Podcasts. We all have phones. Like, don't lie, y'all have a phone. Y'all can literally right now click at a matter of three clicks with your thumb, find this episode and the other 290 that you have and others. So the excuse of development or lack thereof is exactly that, is an excuse. So what I want to say is thank you, Danny, for being the host in this space that allows others to resonate, because at the end of the day, you won't know how many people that you've touched, right? And that's
Right.
okay. Like, a lot of people listen to this, like, they don't even know who the hell you are. They took a listen to mine, they don't even know who the hell I am. And I'm okay with that. I don't need to know who's listening to this. What I care for is that people are listening to it. And so there is a wealth of knowledge that you have spread across the American Fire Service and other that is invaluable. So I want to say thank you for doing what you do, and thank you for hosting in this space. The other thing that I want to mention is you said, how can people find me? So I wrote an article, and is it a shameless plug? Sure. But the intent behind it is I don't get no money for any of this. I don't even get fame for any of this. But
Right.
on Fire Rescue One, if you Google Fire Rescue One and look up experience does not equal teaching ability, I wrote an article, my very first article ever. And basically it touches on a lot of stuff that we talked about in a very concise manner, right? It's probably a 3-minute read. And it talks about training, and it talks about developing of others. It talks about the responsibility, but the privilege it is as a firefighter, no matter your rank, to have influence on others. It talks about taking teaching seriously, because we are influencing the next generation, whether we think we are or not, right? The firefighters that have been in the organization 1 year are influencing everyone that got hired right behind them. Are we doing this positively? Are we doing it negatively? Or are we passive about it? So the article that I wrote, it just simply talks about please take training seriously, and just remember that we have an influence on others, whether we ha intend to or whether we have formal rank or not. And the last thing I'll say is, yeah, I host a podcast that's called The Leadership Conversations at the Kitchen Table, is what it's called. And just like much like you, Danny, it's just the intent. It's just to bring voices to the table, bring new perspectives, so people can learn and listen, right? I'm going to resonate differently with certain speakers, and some I won't with. That there's nothing wrong with that. But what you have is an accumulation of resources that are free, that are at your fingertips, that you can listen to when you're driving somewhere, or when you're cleaning the house, or when you have your AirPods in going for a walk. Is how are we showing up for ourselves now? Let's talk about showing up for ourselves, to better ourselves, to then become better for our families and then the community in which we serve. So that's the last thing I'll say. I work out of here at Eastside Fire Rescue, just east of Seattle. And look me up, give me a call if I can, answer any questions, or want to chop it up even more.
Okay. And where can they listen to it?
Sorry, yeah. Kitchen Table is Spotify, Apple Podcasts, and really any major podcast outlets available on all.
Okay. Like I said, Berlin, man, I've appreciated it. I'm trying to think. I'm sorry, dude. You're gonna have to remind me. And I'm sorry to the person that got me your info. The names, they tend to get lost in the weeds.
Yeah, it's all right.
Who when I called you, who did I say gave me your
It was
number?
Troy. It was
That's
Fire Chief
right.
Troy Gibson out of Hawaii.
That's right. That's right. Troy, I'm sorry,
All
buddy.
right.
I'm getting old.
No. I don't know how you keep track of the 300 people you've had on your show. Troy Gibson, thank you, Troy. A phenomenal human being. That's another topic all in it by itself, but yes.
Yes, absolutely. Chief Gibson, appreciate you, buddy. Yes, I thoroughly enjoyed this conversation, Berlin. So thank you. Thank you again. And hopefully you have a good day.
Appreciate it. Thank you, Danny.
Yes, sir.